we've really been enjoying working with the folks over there. They're super excited, super passionate about this bike park, and they've let us be incredibly creative. And we're trying to just create a huge variety of trails, everything from big jumps to raw trails, catering to beginners, first time at a bike park, to more advanced riders. And I'm super excited because this place is an hour south of Charlotte, and Charlotte, North Carolina is filled with mountain bikers, and they are hungry for places to ride.
Welcome to Trail Effect. I am your host, Josh Blum. Trail Effect is a show that dives into the stories behind trails, the communities that embrace trails, and the people who rely on trails as a way of life. The goal of this show is to turn the stories you will hear from our guests into useful knowledge that can be applied to your community while providing some entertaining and inspirational content. Guests on Trail Effect include trail builders, board members, community leaders, volunteers, and regular people who really enjoy trails. For episode 170, we have Peter Mills, the owner of Elevated Trail Designs, as our guest. Elevated Trail Designs is a PTBA member company that is based out of the Asheville, North Carolina region. Peter is a lifelong mountain biker and trail builder that is responsible for some of the newest yet most notable trail projects in the greater Asheville region and beyond. Cooley Creative is the title sponsor for this episode. They design and build custom websites as well as help companies with branding, photography, and e-commerce. Cooley Creative was started in Wisconsin, but is now based out of Bend, Oregon. Jared from Cooley Creative is a friend of mine. We've traveled together on multiple mountain bike trips, and sometimes he sends it. For more information about Cooley Creative, head on over to www.dudejustsendit.com. Yes, that's right, www.dudejustsendit will get you to the Cooley Creative website, so check it out. Kettle Mountain Apparel, the brand that was built by travelers, hikers, trail runners, and mountain bikers, with the motto of venture far, laugh hard. While I definitely use Kettle Mountain Apparel for mountain biking, Kettle Mountain is also my go-to choice for daily wear as it is super functional and comfortable. Kettle Mountain Apparel also offers a lifetime gear repair program with the goal of extending the life of their products while reducing waste in the process. If you ever damage any of your apparel, Kettle Mountain will repair it for free for life. By using the affiliate link found in the show notes or on the Trail Effect website, a small commission will come back to the Trail Effect podcast, which helps to cover the cost of expenses for keeping this show going. Now on to the Trail Effect with Peter Mills. Here we are today on Trail Effect. I have Peter Mills. He is the owner and founder of Elevated Trail Design, based out of North Carolina, but he serves the entire Southeast. And from what I can tell, he also serves other parts of the country as well. How's it going today?
It's going well.
We met in person at the 2024 PTBA conference. Let's get your thoughts on that before we dig into the Peter Mills backstory.
Yeah, well, I had the greatest time at the PTBA conference in Georgia this year. I've been an elected member since 2013, and I'd been to, I guess, two conferences over the years, and it had been a while, but, you know, everybody's kind of in their own little region and just has their head down working. And, you know, sometimes we get to see each other at pre-bids. Sometimes we get to work together on projects, but the conference just was like overwhelmingly positive for me, just getting to connect with so many folks I never see. I mean, I got to connect with Tony Boone, and we hadn't worked together in 10 years. And, you know, I think one of the most exciting parts of the conference for me was connecting with the owners of the big four companies in Australia. You know, I mean, it was just a real treat to get to talk shop with Glenn Jacobs and David Wilcox, you know, World Trail and Common Ground Trail. And then also getting to talk with both Adrians with Synergy Trails and Living Trails. You know, it's just really refreshing to be around folks that are doing the exact same thing that I'm doing and kind of getting inspired by the energy that they still have for it after all these years.
I would agree. Yeah, this is my third conference, and I think out of the three I've been to, this was by far the best. I mean, they've all been good, so it's not to knock any previous conferences, but the energy at this one just seemed like a couple notches up from previous ones that I'd gone to.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, it's just, I can't say enough how it was like just kind of energizing for me. You know, it's just such a real treat to get together with folks, you know, outside of a project or a pre-bid and just kind of be together.
Yeah. And, you know, you talked about, you know, connecting with all the builders from Australia, and it, you know, I'm sure you found the same thing, but a lot of the problems they have are the same problems we have, right? Like you can kind of talk shop and it resonates.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of the things they dealt with maybe were kind of years ago and kind of, you know, the United States is kind of playing catch up in that heavy investment in outdoor recreation. You know, and also I definitely would love to say that it was great to connect with all the local builders that I never get to see enough. I mean, getting to see, you know, Ed with Trail Dynamics and Todd with Long Cane Trails, getting to connect with Craig and CTD Trails, you know, the folks at Nature Trails, it was just really enjoyable.
Obviously, we met for the first time in person there. We'd been connected through, I believe it was Craig over at Pisgah Area Sorba connected us via email, you know, a few months ago, but to be able to connect in person is a whole different thing. And it's just really good. The weather was nice too, although it was a little cold initially, but it was still awesome.
Yeah. Next conference, let's have it in a destination with some more mountain biking.
It's going to have to be a PTB only because the next actual conference that's scheduled is the one up in Wisconsin.
Yep.
Which is about 2 hours from where I live. And it's in April and it could be a crapshoot. And it's also in Madison. And I'm not going to knock the mountain biking in Madison, but it's not, there's not a ton of it. Let's just say.
I've got it on the calendar, so I might have to drag some more of my team with me.
Yeah, so we'll definitely have to figure out a game plan for that. And let's get into your backstory. Like, what got you into mountain biking initially? Because I'm sure that's probably a part of how you get into trail building. But let's dig way back into the early days with your story.
Yeah, so I got into mountain biking as a kid. My dad was early into the mountain bike scene, you know, had one of the first RockShox forks and loved to get outside. And growing up, he just kind of got me into it. And that was our thing. That's how we got outside. You know, also loved hiking and, you know, some trail running. But for me, mountain biking is my life. So just kind of stuck with it. You know, went to a lot of summer camps mountain biking, you know, made some of my best friends that I still have to this day from those early days mountain biking. And kind of when I was in middle school, I got to experience a couple volunteer trail days when I was at a summer camp up in the Northeast, helping out lay a boardwalk through a bog in Vermont. And that kind of opened my mind up to, you know, not just mountain biking or enjoying trails, to working on them. And then, you know, in middle school, I also got involved in my love for dirt jumps. And so I'd hang out at the jumps of all the BMXers and just be digging clay jumps in North Carolina. And that progressed to kind of traveling to the early days of slopestyle mountain biking and dirt jump contests, downhill racing. And then I was in college at UNC Asheville and I was like, I got to figure out a way to enjoy what I do for a career. You know, I just kind of leaned on what I saw happening around me, you know, seeing Ed with Trail Dynamics. I was like, wow, this guy's got a real business working on trails, you know, getting to go to Whistler Mountain Bike Park when I was very, very young, you know, that was inspiring as well. Just seeing like, all right, we can make big berms, jumps, all different types of trails. So, I mean, I was fortunate just to get the exposure from travel to experience all these different places. And that kind of led me to, like I said, I was sitting in college in my accounting and my business classes. And I was like, I got to do something trail related, and just kind of dove into it. I, you know, in 2011, I started my business, but I guess I should back up. So when I was this summer before I graduated college, I spent the whole summer in Whiteface, New York, and I was living outside of Lake Placid. Spent the whole summer just doing handwork, working on the trails there, prepped a trail for a Pro GRT race, and, you know, was making no money, living on somebody's couch, building trails. And that fall went back to my last year of college and I was like, all right, well, let's do this. So I started the business and that was kind of it.
Did you grow up in Asheville or where did you grow up?
I grew up in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. My family's from Asheville. And then after I graduated high school in Chapel Hill, came to UNC Asheville. You know, I mentioned kind of I got involved in the early days of some slopestyle events, and I'd become friends with Kyle Ebbett over the years, and he invited me to help out on some Teva slopestyle builds and a Crankworks Colorado build. And the timing was perfect. I was like, well, I just started my trail company. Like, let me come, I'll come work for you. he had known me since I was like 16, I guess. And so he was just like, all right, let's do this. And I came out, I was in Colorado working on these courses, and that just introduced me to all kinds of folks. I met some of the owners of Gravity Logic. I met Tom and Rob and Dave Kelly out there, and they were like, well, what happens next week once you're done with this slopestyle course? And I was like, well, looking for work. Long story short, I left that slopestyle build and went and spent the next year and a half in West Virginia, subcontracted by Gravity Logic, and kind of call that the Wharton Business School of Trail Building, if you will. And since then, it's just been nonstop.
That's awesome. You definitely probably were in a couple of the right places at the right time to connect with those people, you know, to really.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still the luminaries in the industry, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, those three gentlemen at Gravity Logic, you know, kind of set the bar, transitioning from trail crew to managing the bike park and designing and building bike parks all around the world.
Let's get into your, the company profile. You're like a full service shop where you have design and construction of all types of trails. You know, maybe kind of outlay your services and what you have for staff.
Yeah. So, you know, we are full service trail design, planning, construction firm, like you said. You know, we specialize in mountain bike parks and mountain bike trails. But that being said, we build a ton of hiking only trail. We build equestrian trail. You know, we work with state parks, cities, towns, conservation groups, ski resorts, private clients occasionally. So really the full spectrum of trails. You know, oftentimes we are still finding ourselves bidding on projects, you know, where design's already there. But, you know, I've kind of been fortunate enough to be doing this long enough that I'm able to be selective and kind of pursue the jobs that I'm really passionate about. And so that's kind of been a transition, you know, now that I've been in business a long time, trying to be more selective with what we pursue. You know, in a perfect world, I love getting involved with a blank slate, starting with the design, working with the stakeholders, working with the client, you know, assessing the land, determining the best use, and then transitioning into the build out. You know, kind of the beauty is every project is different. So that's like one of the things that keeps, you know, my job exciting and interesting. And so, you know, I guess kind of like that brings me to like the next step, which is like, you know, how do you decide like how large a company do you want? And so, you know, over the years, we've kind of been between like 5 and 8 people working for us. Right now, there's 5 of us. And I've kind of shifted my focus to just having these full-time employees and really trying to invest in people. You know, I've had AJ on my team for 8 years, and Josh has been with me for 5 years. And I just think it's really valuable to have these folks involved in the long term. You know, I see a lot of companies struggle to retain folks, and that's kind of a common theme in the industry. And so I've just, you know, I'm really trying to kind of invest in these folks rather than kind of get too large and have a bunch of people that, you know, aren't happy, healthy, and productive. That being said, you know, we are about to be hiring a few more folks. So keep an eye out for that on the internet.
Well, and with that, I think, you know, this actually was a topic of conversation at the conference quite a bit, was like right sizing your company, right? And yeah, as you know, absolutely. I work for a company that's large, and it seems like, and this is, I guess this has been my take on it since long before I even started working for where I work, which is like, you either are smallerish, like your size and nimble, or you get really big so you can support having all the extra staff that you need to have to keep everything else in line. And if you're in the middle, that kind of becomes, that's where things get dicey.
Oh yeah. And so, you know, it is difficult to turn down some projects. You know, I think the big thing is I want to hyper focus regionally. And so I've been very fortunate over the last kind of 4 or 5 years to be able to focus very regionally in Western North Carolina. You know, the other thing that we do is, you know, we create teams a lot. So for some projects, I'll be, you know, bringing in a landscape architect, I'll be bringing in a planning firm, I'll be bringing in the engineers. You know, the other thing I love to do is, you know, this is just a small industry. It's a small world we're in. So I love working with friends that are, you know, other small trail companies. So, you know, my good buddy, Max Backslope Trails, he's been coming down the last few winters from Vermont. So while he's got snow on the ground, he's been down here plugging away on some of our job sites in the winter. And, you know, I kind of love that collaborative effort in our industry. That's been one of the, I think, most fun parts of it for me.
What is your take on the fact that the industry is, and I think, I mean, well, I'll get your take on it before I give you my take, of the fact that we're doing more, that there's more planning and design going on up front, right, than what used to happen. It used to be like, go build a trail in the woods for me. The person, the client, whoever, maybe gave you a little bit of intel as far as like what they wanted to look and feel like, what their objective was. But then it was really a canvas, you know, outside of, you know, depending on where it was at in terms of property, having the, you know, having some restrictions, but really there wasn't a lot of planning and design, let's say, on the front end.
I think there's been a big shift with people understanding that if you invest more on the front end with your planning, then you're going to be able to seek more funding and create a better product on the tail end. You know, our industry, even though trails have been around since the beginning of time, as far as contracting, this industry is still relatively new. So I think that I'm a firm believer, and I think everybody else is, that more planning is better. You know, because these larger projects, you know, when we're doing these 19, 20 mile trail systems, you know, we need to just do all the due diligence, dot our I's, cross our T's, make sure, you know, the community is engaged, make sure the stakeholders are there, make sure the land managers are happy, and set these larger goals. You know, a lot of folks get into it, you know, you got to do these little, you go into an old trail system and somebody will say, hey, can you fix this little bit? And, you know, it's fun doing these little repairs, but I just think it's better to take a whole approach. So anytime we talk to clients, I say, all right, you want to talk about this trail and your trail system? Why don't we assess the entire trail system, come up with a plan? How can we improve it? And then you can have a package that then you can take and go seek fundraising to, you know, meet your goals. And, you know, really, like, you know, talking to Glenn Jacobs in Australia, you know, he just kind of laughs. He's like, you got to go after the big money. He's like, the municipalities, in his experience and my experience, would rather have a large project instead of, you know, do these little itsy pieces that kind of don't tie together.
Yeah.
But I think something that's really been inspiring for me is, you know, seeing like Aaron with Rock Solid and kind of the route he's gone is really impressive. I love seeing how, you know, having landscape architects on staff, engineers on staff, I mean, you know, that's taking it to the next level. And, you know, I would love to be able to have a landscape architect on full-time staff, you know, but kind of currently where I'm at now, it's been wonderful being able to, you know, contract these other companies in the regions we're working.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's talk about a project that is maybe the highest profile project in terms of what people have viewed on the internet, but is much larger than what a lot of people probably actually know it to be, which is Chestnut Mountain. And the reason why I say it's a high profile one is because Seth at Berm Peak had you guys build Berm Park, but that's only a small piece of that whole like landscape. Let's talk about that. First, let's talk about the Berm Park part. I always get Berm Park and Berm Peak confused. But then talk about what's actually there, like beyond.
Yeah. Kind of to summarize that project. So Chestnut Mountain Nature Park's a 450-acre conservation easement. The Southern Highland Appalachian Conservancy kind of manages that. And it's owned by the town of Canton. So the town of Canton's an old paper mill town. It's about 30 minutes from my house. And this piece of land had been sitting there years ago. It was slated to be a NASCAR training facility. Not really conducive to do that with a, you know, 1,000 feet of vertical. Long story short, the town of Canton, there's a fellow, Nick Scheuer, got involved in the town. You know, he's our age, super passionate mountain biker, outdoorsman. And he reached out to me in 2020 and I met out there and he was like, do you think there's some potential for a trail system? And he was like, have you heard of a guy named Seth? And I was like, oh, I actually had just met him at the skate park in our town. I was riding around downtown Asheville in the skate park. And I met Seth there, just bumped into him. He introduced himself, was a super nice guy. And then it was just a couple weeks later, he was like, hey, I got this idea. Like, I'd love to use my platform to raise money and try to build a mountain bike park. He's like, where could that happen? And he had been kind of approaching some different municipalities and, you know, nobody had like a shovel ready project where they could accept his money. But then the timing was perfect because the town of Canton was already in the early stages of planning out this new trail system conservation easement. And so Seth and I met out there and he was like, what do you think if I raise some money and would you want to build a bike park here? And I was like, let's do it, you know? And we just shook on it then. I was like, all right, let's shake on this and we'll figure this out one step at a time. And so then the town of Canton, they were getting grant funding and they were able to hire Elevated Trail Design. And so they hired us to create a trail system master plan. They hired Equinox Planning to create the kind of parking lot plan and, you know, kind of connect all those pieces for the overall facility. And then Seth said, you know, he's like, all right, we set a goal for kind of what he was going to raise. And, you know, we created an arrangement where the town of Canton, to accept his funding, they were like, all right, well, we're going to pay Elevated Trail Design to design this bike park. And then you seek money to build it. And so, you know, Seth, he is fantastic at painting these stories. And so through his kind of video story, he was able to get all these companies involved and privately fund the Burn Park area. So the Burn Park area was it's about 6 acres. And so that area is within the trail system. You know, Burn Park is relatively small. It's a pocket mountain bike park with a focused climb. And then there's an advanced, intermediate, beginner, and then kid friendly kind of trail within it. And it's super fun. But when it was just Burn Park, it wasn't enough to spend your whole day. And so, you know, what I'm really excited about is today, you know, since we built Burn Park, the town of Canton has been able to, you know, use RTP grants and some PARTEF grants. And they've been able to seek some other grant funding to hire us to create a 17-mile trail system. So around the Burn Park area, now we've got a trail system that's equal 3 parts, hiking only, mountain bike only, and then shared use. And so now, I mean, we've got a place where you can spend an entire day and you might not be able to ride every trail.
Let's talk about the fact that you have segregated uses there and how that's working out, because I think that's a topic that I'd like to dive into more in this, with this podcast, just to create more awareness around the pros and cons of it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so one of the big things is the Southern Highland Appalachian Conservancy has thousands of acres of conservation land. But as far as active recreation, this is one of their first. So the idea of having a focused mountain bike park was very new to them. And then the idea of having mountain bikers within this whole trail system was kind of a new idea. And so working with Hani, you know, I kind of discussed, you know, all of their concerns of user conflict, which are just very visible in all the trail systems around here. I said, you know what, we've got some new ideas. Other trail systems have been doing this. Let's focus our direction to reduce our user conflict. So what we did is the climbing trail, you know, if you're hiking, if you're trail running, you can go either direction, but if you're mountain biking, you can only go uphill. So any of the shared trail experiences, mountain bikers are going uphill. All the issues usually come from mountain bikers going downhill. It just is what it is. Unfortunately, the mountain bikers are not always polite or respectful flying down the mountain. So what we've done then is create mountain bike only exit trail. And then there's 7 in total, there's 7 separate mountain bike only trails from beginner to true double black advanced trails within the system.
And it's got 1,000 feet of vert on it.
Yep.
So how long are your gravity trail? I'm assuming they're downhill directional, right? So how long are those trails?
Yeah, they're all single direction. Yeah. Down most of the way. It's about 3, it depends on which route you do. Like the longest option would be about 3 miles, 3.2 miles, I think. But you can kind of mix and match. So a couple of the descents are a little over 1 mile and then a couple are almost 2 miles and you kind of join them together. And, you know, you can mix and match to choose your favorite. You can also, you know, do loops at the upper elevation, just riding the double black trail, or you can kind of do loops in the middle or the bottom. And so now, like, the full picture is there in function and form, so that Burn Park is this hub. So if you get there and you're going to meet your friends, you can pedal up from the parking lot, do a couple laps, then your buddies show up, then you head up, do some other laps, and then you centrally wind up right back at the Burn Park area.
How has that layout been for navigation? Because that's another issue that, whether we like it or not, navigating trails sometimes can be very difficult for people in terms of, like, am I going the right way? What should I do? What shouldn't I do?
Absolutely. So one of the things I did to simplify navigation, one of the primary descending trails is called Lady Bird off the top. And so what we've done is we've had several trails join in near the bottom. So like you could start on four different trails. Those four trails all are going to join in the last sixth of this other trail, kind of staggered over 1,000 feet from each other. And so the idea is to kind of keep the flow where people don't have to, you know, hopefully we take some guesswork out. So people will go down the trail Wildcat or they'll go down Imperial and then they'll say, oh, hey, I'm on Lady Bird. I know where I am. And then they pop right out at Burn Park. So I think that's been helpful. I think one thing you always face with a new trail system, you know, when you've got 17 or 20 miles, I think the biggest thing is some people forget that that's a lot to explore. You know, you got to bring some snacks, you got to bring a sandwich, you got to bring some water. And, you know, I think for me, part of mountain biking is exploring. And so, you know, setting out and taking it all in and figuring out your route, you know, your first time at a trail system, you might not take your favorite route. You know, it might take a couple of visits, but I feel confident that at Chestnut, we've done some things to try to simplify it, you know, but we can't do everything at every trail system. You know, I definitely, you know, the benefit of that huge vertical is really fun for advanced riders. Trail runners love getting out there. You know, they can go and do a 12.5 mile run, you know, not repeat any segments, but you know, there's no area at the bottom for true kid beginner trails. We're working with the town to try to bring in a kid skills area at the bottom, potentially allocate some more land in the future if they could purchase it to kind of expand out the base area. But you know how the battle is. You can't do everything always at every trail system.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you did 95% of it. So including the hike only. How's the reception been from the hikers?
I think it's been good. There was a trail running event that they hosted in the fall, and I think they had pretty good attendance. I think there was almost 100 folks, and it was the first time they had done it. I think that it takes a little longer for hikers and trail runners to have discovered Chestnut Mountain because there was so much excitement about the Burn Park area, rightfully so, that a lot of hikers and folks I talk to, you know, they say, isn't that just for mountain bikers? But now, coming into 2024, more people are aware of the hiking trails. And so, you know, I was there this past Sunday. I mean, the whole parking lot was filled, and it's pretty special to see after, you know, a couple of years of building.
That sounds awesome. There's another project that I came across on your website that was it seemed a little unique to me, and it's more on the planning side of things, but it's called AVL Unpaved. What is that all about?
Thrilled you brought that up. That was a project I wanted to talk about. So the city of Asheville is surrounded by beautiful opportunities to get outside. Pisgah National Forest, everything that's offered in Transylvania County, everything that's offered on the other side of town. But right in Asheville, there just aren't opportunities to get out and have a real mountain bike experience or really get out and go for a hike in the woods unless you hop in a vehicle, drive out, go to Bent Creek, go to Pisgah. So back in December of 2020, I met with some folks from the city and a group formed, kind of spearheaded by Mike Sewell with Asheville on Bikes. And Pisgah Area Sorba has gotten involved as well. And the city kind of had several slivers of land that have, you know, just aren't conducive for building. And these little pockets around the city, you know, we went and looked at them all and they said, you know, what do you think? Can we put some trail in there? And I was like, absolutely. You know, creating these opportunities within the city, I think the idea is to create, you know, access to getting outside, whether you're hiking, running, going for a bike ride, to people that are in these underserved communities. You know, mountain biking is just a very privileged activity, and we can't take for granted that, you know, you got to have resources and time to hop in a vehicle, go somewhere and get outside. So, you know, Mike with Asheville on Bikes, you know, they run these after school programs and it's super cool. They get kids, you know, that would never have an opportunity to have a bike or have somebody to, you know, take them out and show them how to ride. You know, they get kids on bikes and, you know, they engage them in a healthy hobby. So, you know, he got involved because he wanted to create trails and little kids skills areas in the city so that, you know, instead of in the parking lot riding around cones, they could actually get in the woods. You know, it's been a long project. The pandemic really slowed down a lot of the engagement. you know, some of this, the speed at which meetings occur just was kind of slowed down during that period. But today, where we are now, I mean, yesterday I was just meeting with Mike with Asheville and Bikes, and we were walking around. You know, my firm got hired to design these trail systems. So there was five parcels initially where we designed, you know, hiking, shared use, even some mountain bike only trails. Since then, the project has been focused on three parcels. Fingers crossed, hopefully the final approval will come this spring. You know, it'll have to go out to bid, but I'm, you know, I'm really, really hopeful I'll be able to be competitive enough to win that and bring some trail opportunities, you know, into the city that I love.
I love going to that region and that area, but you're right. You do need a car for a lot of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when I went to UNCA, 5 days a week, I was driving to Brevard to go mountain biking. And that was pretty easy to do as a college student with my priorities focused on mountain biking. But I think, you know, the city of Asheville is trying to play catch up. You know, Knoxville, Tennessee has just been super impressive. You know, that's a great example of investing in your community. You know, the bike club there is purchasing slivers of land, just like we're talking about. And it doesn't matter what neighborhood you really live in, you can access trails within their city. And so that's been a local inspiration, you know, that we're trying to bring that here. But I feel confident it'll happen. You know, as I'm sure you know, sometimes it takes 4 or 5 years from those first planning meetings and community engagement, you know, before a shovel ever hits dirt.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I've said forever, like the building part is almost the easiest part of the whole thing. I mean, granted, it's not easy physically, but like when it comes to like all the stuff you're talking about, you know, you're 80% there.
The building is, you know, experience and problem solving. You know, we can get through any of that, but the, you know, when we're in the public engagement meetings, I don't know what to tell somebody about the bears that are going through their trash can. You know, the trails may or may not affect that. It's tough to say, but the thing I can confidently say is if we put trails in these spaces and we activate them, you know, some of the, you know, current issues in these properties will hopefully, you know, kind of disappear as the spaces are activated. People are out there. The community will use it. And I like to think it can, you know, result in a safer space. And I mean, for me, I just want to see kids that don't have an opportunity to get outside, be able to actually get outside, you know, where they live.
For sure. Having that low barrier of entry. And for people that want, you know, when they get done with work, the last thing I want to do is load up a vehicle to go drive again. If you can hop on your bike for even a half hour.
Exactly. And you know, the one thing is our city is now finally getting the momentum with our paved and, you know, concrete greenways. And so, you know, this is just another tier for that access. You know, if you live in West Asheville, if you could get on a trail, then access a greenway, ride to the other side of town, meet your friends, and then ride around through the city. I mean, I think that would really improve the quality of life and kind of get Asheville back on the map for being an outdoor, you know, an outdoor-based economy locally.
Yeah. Let's go into gravity bike parks.
Yeah.
You brought up Gravity Logic early on, but let's get your perspective from a builder. I got kind of three different angles to take on this. You know, your perspective from a builder, first, like, how do you feel the role of the gravity bike park fits into our ecosystem? Because, you know, we were just talking about, you know, trails that are like right by your house, you know, and gravity bike parks, most people don't have those right by their house. Some people are fortunate.
Yeah.
But let's talk about their role too, because they play a pivotal part in all of this.
I mean, I guess I could bring it back to when I was a kid with my dad and my cantilever brakes. You know, we would take the chairlift at Whitetail and Massanutten in Virginia. And we'd go up to some resorts in Pennsylvania. And, you know, back then it was just, you know, it wasn't really purpose built yet. It was kind of like the ski. There was a hiking trail, maybe the ski patroller. There was a mountain biker on the crew and they were like, hey, we cleared out this trail. But I loved it. I mean, you know, you were just on your brakes going straight through the woods. I mean, my dad had a hoot at it also. He thought it was fun. But then, you know, we've seen a shift towards like actual bike parks, bike specific trail. And I think that plays a huge part in, you know, the mountain bike industry. But also, I just think like we need to just it's been happening for years, but it's more than ever, you know, in the Southeast, you can't really have a ski resort operating for very long. You know, the resorts here, if they have 2 months of consistent snow operations, that's great for where we live. But I just think it represents an opportunity to have three season mountain bike parks. You know, I love what Highland Mountain Bike Park has done in New Hampshire. You know, that's an awesome example of you don't need the biggest mountain. You don't need the steepest slope. And for them, they don't even need skiing. You know, they don't open for the winter for skiing anymore. And so that's enabled them to do more with their slope than you would be able to do if they were still doing winter ops. With Whistler in the beginning and then like what Highland has done and these other resorts, I mean, the evolution of the trails, the evolution of the bikes, the evolution of the riders kind of all has helped progress the sport and I think brought more people into it and absolutely brought more, you know, revenue into resorts.
Yeah. And I mean, you look just at where you live or your region, I should say, you got two bike parks, right?
Yeah.
That are, I'm going to say pay to play bike parks. One's a pedal park and one's got shuttles in an area that has a lot of public access and they appear to be functioning quite well.
Oh yeah. Yeah. My friends, Callie and Nico, I love what they're doing. Callie worked for ETD for like half a year, I guess, right before they opened up Canoga. So helped her sharpen her chops on some trail building. But yeah, she should get all the credit in the world for making an awesome e-bike park. And then, you know, I love what they're doing, bringing downhill racing into the area again with Ride Rock Creek. So I think that's been super cool. And, you know, clearly there's a demand. You know, I was fortunate to spend 3 years working with Beach Mountain Bike Park. So, you know, helped bring their bike park kind of up a few notches. And it's been fun to see what they're doing over there with Beach and Sugar over in near Boone and Banner Elk. But I'm pretty excited. I don't have a lot I can say at the moment, but I can happily say that I'm plugging away on the bike park plan for a ski resort 25 minutes down the road from me. The former Wolf Laurel Ski Resort is now called Hatley Point. And just yesterday I was out there with Deb Hatley, the owner, and we were going over plans, walking through the woods, looking at flag lines. So there'll be more information in the future, but you know, that represents a perfect opportunity to have, you know, a full year-round resort, you know, three seasons of mountain biking, one short season of skiing, and, you know, is situated in this fantastic region between Asheville and Johnson City, Tennessee. So I'm really excited to see what that could do for the kind of chairlift scene in our area.
Yeah. And you also brought up a point that is super important, which is you don't need a ton of elevation. You know, I've said it a lot on here. You know, you get too much elevation, it just becomes unrealistic for a lot of riders. You know, by the time they get halfway down or three quarters of the way down, they're so cooked that it doesn't become fun for them anymore, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think, you know, the trails people like to ride don't always mesh with the steep terrain. You know, at Chestnut Mountain, it's been really cool. We got to do a trail that's really focused on the mountain bikers. You know, we did this trail called Imperial, and it's got what I love. It's got a lot of hand built. It's got a lot of rake and ride. It's got some sections that are totally unbuilt. And then it's got, you know, a ton of pocket berms that we built with some small excavators in there. You know, in our region, people have been, you know, it's hard to please everybody, but there's a segment of mountain bikers that want to ride more aggressive, challenging, steeper trails. And there's been a general trend in, you know, trail systems all over to kind of close those types of trails. So, you know, working with town manager Nick and working with the folks at Chestnut Mountain, we've been able to create a trail where we're trying to show, hey, you can make a challenging trail. It can be steep, it can push grades, but we just need to control what's happening. You know, we need to control the water. We need to catch the rider. We need to plan for the degradation and kind of anticipate it. So, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm trying my hardest to make cool, challenging bike trails, you know, despite the difficulties of it. Cause it is easier to say, hey, we can't build a trail straight down here, but it's also really fun to ride a variety of trails. And I think like, you don't want to have trail systems or destinations that are just a very narrow style of trail.
That actually reminds me of the fact that a lot of their, and I'm going to bring up a dark side of what of our industry, our sport, our world, which is rogue trail building, right? If you can, and I've said this forever, if you can actually provide what rogue trail builders are trying to achieve in a fashion like you just explained, then you don't need to have rogue trail building because it's being offered, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, that's a real can of worms. It's an issue with all over the world with trail systems, land managers, and you know, my friends, the mountain bikers are not always respectful, and you know, it's a difficult topic. It's a can of worms I didn't really want to dive into, but
we don't have to dive into the topic. I wanted to illustrate that by doing what you're doing at Chestnut, that turns that into a positive by offering experiences that sometimes people can't get in other places.
Exactly. I mean, that's what we're trying to do, is like, you can't make everybody happy, but like, if we can create a challenging trail that mimics all the things that they want in their rogue trail within a public trail system, add to it that it's getting professionally maintained, you know, then I think we can make folks happy. You know, one of the challenges is there's so many different types of bikers. You know, there's the people that love the rut straight down the hill and they're super advanced. And then there's folks that are super advanced and they love big jumps. And so like, we're trying to provide both those opportunities. You know, I would be devastated if people started building rogue trails at Chestnut Mountain. I like to think that, you know, we did enough that people could be entertained, but, you know, we'll see how that goes.
Well, and I think that's also where bike parks come into the picture, right?
Yeah.
Because they allow you to push the limits on certain things, because you have a staff, hopefully there's a staff that, you know, helps maintain stuff and looks after things. And so you can provide those experiences that aren't necessarily always available everywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, I like to think that, you know, with the trend in our industry, you know, trail building professionals, our industry's grown. There's so many talented people in it now. I like to think that people are getting out of the box and being more creative and continuing to try to make trails that are challenging for different type of riders to kind of check the boxes and make these, you know, locations and trail systems that are, you know, repeatable and enjoyable and, you know, push us to kind of stay entertained and keep enjoying what we do, mountain biking or getting out and going for a hike.
We've talked about this quite a bit, but maybe we can drill down a little bit further. Let's talk about your ideal project and the things that you look for both in design and construction that may be unique to like your design style or what Elevated Trail Design's style is in terms of a project.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a little tough. That's a tough question because I think for me, you know, the ideal project is difficult to get because usually we're working with, a client will want a certain type of trail and their terrain or property may or may not align at all. You know, at Chestnut Mountain, we're making a blue trail on the top of that mountain, and it'd be a lot easier to make a black trail in certain areas, you know, or, you know, we're working in the Piedmont and, you know, people really want aggressive, difficult trails. But, you know, if you're in the flat land and you're just doing, you know, rolling 50 feet of elevation, it's pretty tough to create that downhill mountain bike experience. So I guess for me, you know, because we can't control what the property is. So you kind of got to remove that from the equation. And so I'd say an ideal project is a project where, you know, the client or the municipality has clear goals and has good expectations for those goals and is willing to invest in going through all the due diligence and the proper planning on the front end to make sure what they're saying is going to happen once it's implemented from a construction standpoint is actually the same thing. That's the biggest thing for me, is whenever I'm in a planning phase, I want to make sure that client understands what it is they're actually going to be getting once that's implemented. You know, a lot of folks are kind of doing a lot of renderings and graphic stuff. And I think it's great seeing how that's grown. But for me, I'm fortunate that I've been doing this long enough now that I've gotten to work in a lot of these so many different settings and create different types of trails in different settings. So, you know, in a perfect world, I love to take the clients out to different projects we've done and show them different types of trail in different settings. If we can't do that, then, you know, photos and videos of stuff we've created in those settings to kind of show and paint that picture. Because that's always the biggest challenge is I can walk around in the woods with you and you and I could chat and you could say, oh, I understand. I get this. I see this. We could discuss it and we could kind of see the vision. But making sure that client that's in that town office, in that parks and rec department, that might not be a mountain biker, might not get outside much and see a trail system, you know, getting them to see what that final product could be. I mean, that's the most challenging thing, but also kind of the most critical component in a successful project.
Yeah. And I really like how you leaned into doing the homework on the front end.
Yeah. The last thing, I mean, I never want to do a project and have to ask for more money for an issue. If there's a bridge, a retaining wall, whatever it is, let's figure that out on the front end. You know, you just don't want surprises. And that's the biggest thing for me is if we can just lay our cards on the table, brainstorm all the solutions and, you know, come up with a plan, then everybody's going to be happier. It's going to be easier. It's going to be a smoother transition from the planning, design to construction, and then to the, you know, operations management of whatever that facility is.
So this is a question that I ask a lot of people. What are the ingredients that you feel make a great trail community? And it's different for everybody. I'm going to say some people, I haven't thrown it out in a while, but I'm going to say wood-fired pizzas. That was a critical component for me, kind of tongue in cheek, but I really like wood-fired pizza. I kind of say that to illustrate that, like, there's a lot of different ingredients that are, you know, available, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, that's another challenging question. Yeah. I mean, I think what you need is not just people that are willing to like engage time, but also willing to engage and work with people in different communities. You know, we build hiking trails, we build horse trails, we build mountain bike trails. Most people just, you know, they see a couple Instagram pictures and they think, oh, those guys just build bike parks. And I mean, the truth is we just don't put pictures of hiking trails on social media that much because people want to see bike jumps. So I think for me, it's people willing to come to the table and like understand that like, if we're volunteering on a multi-use trail in Pisgah, you know, that's for hikers, that's for trail runners, that's for hunters, that's for the equestrian community. And I think like, we're just all doing the same thing. Whether you're biking or on a horse, you're getting outside, enjoying your day. So I think like collaboration is the best part, the best thing we could do for a community. You know, I think like you mentioned, connecting over some pizza is a great way after a trail day to talk. You know, I think my answer to this question is kind of like, I can think about what I'm doing just in the near term. Like, you know, I'm excited about a project we're about to do with Pisgah Area Sorba. We're going to be rehabilitating the Greens Lick Trail in Bent Creek Forest. I've probably ridden that trail, I don't even know, a few hundred times. That's a trail I rode as a kid. I used to drag people out on it that had never mountain biked and bring them on my extra bike in college out there. But, you know, some people aren't going to be excited when they hear trail work's happening on Greens Lick in Bent Creek. So some people are going to be kind of ruffled feathers. But at the end of the day, I'm taking it as an opportunity to make this trail way more rugged, narrower, more fun. But more importantly, I'm trying to work with the club and get people engaged again. So what we're trying to do is host Thursday evening volunteer sessions. So we'll be out there all week, but on Thursdays, probably at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we want to invite folks to come out and, you know, from 3 to 7, come help us out on the trail. You know, we're going to be working the trail top down and we're going to kind of have our assembly line style. And, you know, when folks show up, we'll kind of let them drop in line, you know, start doing some naturalization, some raking, some plate compacting, some leaf blowing, moving some rocks, helping armor some sections. And, you know, if we can do 5 or 6 of these in the summer, I think it'd be really fun. And I think, you know, my goal is to hopefully attract younger people, people from the city of Asheville, and get them more involved in Pisgah Area Sorba and engage these folks with, you know, the equestrian users that are out there in Pisgah National Forest, in the Brevard area, and try to just continue to kind of pull folks together. Because that's what I want to see is more people getting excited and, you know, less talk on Facebook and more mountain biking, hiking.
Let's talk on Facebook and Instagram about how we're paving the world.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a tough crowd out there, but
I've noticed it's really tough there.
You know, but whenever I'm out on a trail, I mean, everybody's smiling and super friendly. And, you know, I only have positive experiences, but I hate seeing the local Pisgah Area Sober Bike Club, you know, having to be in a situation with, you know, everybody mad at them on Facebook and talking about rogue trails. I think that, you know, we should just circle back, focus our energy on doing more, kind of getting together, because we're all the same. We're all just trying to enjoy getting outside.
Well, and you brought a good point up, and that is when you see people, when you see other riders or other friends or whoever in person, everybody's smiling, right?
Oh yeah.
And that's the key to all of this.
Absolutely. I mean, I got into trail building and wanted to start Elevated Trail Design because, you know, I love getting outside. I love mountain biking. And that's the motivating factor, you know, when you're spending, you know, days on end digging on trail in the rain in the middle of winter, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to get to see people enjoying it. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's the biggest joy you can get, right?
For sure. Let's bring this back to the beginning of the conversation with the PTBA and conferences. Yeah. So Tony Boone is trying to start an initiative to take a conference to Australia.
Let's do it.
Let's keep that conversation going, you know, publicly on this forum and wherever else we can, because I'm fairly certain we're all pretty stoked on Australia after that conference.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, super inspired by all those folks in Australia. And yeah, I would love to get over there. Yeah. I'd also love the idea of, you know, even more regional things, like, you know, talking with the other builders in my state, you know, I'd love to host a kind of more informal quarterly meetings in our regions, you know, where, you know, maybe a company or two kind of hosts a ride at one of the trail systems they've created. And we just kind of, you know, more focus on just on hanging out, networking and talking shop. Cause I mean, I think it's, you know, I see a huge value in being in the PTBA. I want the value of the organization to grow. I want people to see the value in that. And I think that, you know, my biggest takeaway from this conference was like, just that, you know, the personal connection and like, you know, connecting with these folks that I just haven't seen in a long time. And I think it's just kind of left me, you know, more validated in my career and our industry and what we're doing, and, you know, just kind of re-energized. I mean, it had been a long winter digging, and I think it was pretty refreshing to see all those nice faces and talk trails.
Yeah. I mean, it was awesome. And, you know, after the conference, I came over to your neighborhood and spent a handful of days in Brevard. And one of those days, you know, I ended up at brunch with Matt Malone.
Cool.
And next thing you know, we were, you know, shuttling to the Blue Ridge Parkway to ride back down. And that was, you know, myself and Aaron and Matt. And to be able to just kind of hang out, compare notes, talk shop, like, and be just humans with each other, exactly. Oh, yeah. What you're talking about was a very...
I wish I could have been there.
You were at a wedding.
I was at a wedding, unfortunately, yeah. Yeah, no, that'd be great. Like I said, I mean, you know, Matt is one of those folks. It's been great to see his business in the last few years grow, and they're doing cool stuff, but, you know, he and I are overdue to connect on a Blue Ridge Parkway ride like you're talking about. So, you know, I hope to make that happen soon.
We got to wrap up doing exactly what you said too, which is ride one of his trails. You know,
that's cool.
We wrapped up riding down Avery.
Nice.
I really liked it. I thought it was a great trail.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't go wrong with all that stuff in Pisgah. There's so many good trails, tons of different variety. And I'm super excited to check out what, you know, your team with Rock Solid's doing out at Butter Gap. That's going to be fun to see what's happened out there.
Yeah. Well, before I wrap this thing up, is there anyone you want to throw thank yous out to? Any closing comments? Or is there a topic that we didn't touch on that you want to bring up? Because I definitely want to make sure that if there's something that I didn't catch, that we talk about it now.
Yeah. Too many shout outs. But I think one project I do want to mention before we hop off. We've been plugging away, designing and building a brand new mountain bike park that's going to be opening this fall. It's located in Winnsboro, South Carolina. It's called the Rattlesnake Bike Park. And it's pretty cool. We've really been enjoying working with the folks over there. They're super excited, super passionate about this bike park, and they've let us be incredibly creative. And we're trying to just create a huge variety of trails, everything from big jumps to raw trails, catering to beginners first time at a bike park to more advanced riders. And I'm super excited because this place is an hour south of Charlotte, and Charlotte, North Carolina is filled with mountain bikers, and they are hungry for places to ride. If you live in Charlotte and you love mountain biking, chances are you're probably trying to go to Brevard or the Western North Carolina most weekends. So this place is going to become an awesome destination for folks to hone their skills, practice their big jumps, you know, before their weekend trips up to the mountains. You know, it's, you know, I think being selective with the projects we do, this was a project when I talked to them, I said, I want to do this, you know, I want to get involved. I like what you guys are trying to accomplish. And I think we can meet those goals. And so we haven't shared a ton about that project yet, just a few pictures on social media, but, yeah, I'm excited to share more and keep an eye out for an opening date.
Can you share if is it a shuttle park or pedal park?
It's a shuttle park. Yeah. So connected them with Sean Leader, and Sean's creating two custom shuttle trailers and setting up some brand new F-550s. So yeah, the shuttles are going to be like the ones at Ride Rock Creek, and they're going to start out with two, and there also is going to be a separate climbing trail, you know, for folks that are, they're going to have camping and they're going to have food and beverage at the top. So yeah, it's going to be a real destination.
This is probably, to me, one of the most exciting things that's currently happening in our world, which is places like this popping up. I just love it.
You know, I honestly talk to a lot of people almost weekly that want to create something like this. So often that there's so many pieces to the puzzle that they still have to put together. But, you know, these folks had all these pieces together. It's not the biggest mountain in the world, but like we said, you don't need the biggest mountain. You know, oftentimes we're fighting that elevation and that grade to create that jump trail, you know, and this place is just set up pretty much perfect for us to build big bike park trails.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that one wasn't, I mean, I guess we talked about it slightly, I think just very briefly at the PTBA conference, but honestly, I'd forgotten about it. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah, no, there's lots of projects. It's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, well, Peter, I really appreciate the fact that you got a little bit of time out of your Friday to get this recorded. I know there'll be people from all over the country that really enjoy listening to this, and Australia too, because that is right now the third country for top listeners. It was second for a while there. Now it's back to third behind Canada.
Yeah, no, let's get it up there. And big shout out to those guys. I got to get over there and visit, you know, Glenn and David and both Adrians, and got to check out Derby. And yeah, let's try to have that be a future PTBA conference. I think that'd be a really special event.
For sure. We could totally invade and make our summer the endless summer and go there when it's their summer.
Yeah. And lots of mountain biking to be had.
Well, you enjoy the rest of your weekend. Hopefully the weather is going to be nice and you can get outside and enjoy it. And I know where I live, it's spring is finally coming. We had 16 inches of snow a little over a week ago. And since then, I've already seen a couple wasps and a snake. So I know spring is here.
Yeah. Well, you know, I look forward to crossing paths with you, and, you know, hope you can get out to Asheville, North Carolina, and come visit sometime in the not so distant future.
Oh, for sure. And you'll be one of the first people to know.
Awesome.
Well, thank you, Peter. Enjoy your weekend.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you've heard, please take the time to share these shows with others. Sharing these shows will help create awareness of both the guests who have taken the time to be on the show and the podcast series itself. Also, if you're new to the Trail Effect podcast, check out our ever-expanding library of episodes. If you listen to the Trail Effect podcast on Apple or Spotify, please don't forget to leave a rating and review, as this is one of the best ways to show your support for the Trail Effect podcast. Also, don't forget to check out Cooley Creative at www.dojustsendit.com. For additional ways to help support the Trail Effect podcast, check out the affiliate links tab at the Trail Effect website, where you'll find links to Kettle Mountain Apparel, Worldwide Cyclery, and Trail One Components. By using the affiliate links found at www.trail-effectpodcast.com, a small commission will come back to the podcast, which will help keep this thing going. This podcast has been edited and produced by Evolution Trail Services. Thank you again for listening.